208 here on WWL on this, I don't know, so far pretty lovely Monday afternoon. I am sitting in for Scoot today, and again tomorrow. He'll be back on Wednesday. He's at Pensacola, Florida, enjoying the beach with his grandkids. I'm sure that's a lovely time. I got to get out there, man. I haven't been to Pensacola in a minute. Got to go get some seafood, visit that sugar white sand. And hey, now we're supposed to get that train, the Amtrak to Mobile. That's supposed to be happening before the Super Bowl. So that might be right around the corner.
Why does your face look like that, like you're skeptical?
Because I'm trying to remember if I remember that story correctly. I don't think they announced an opening date for the New Orleans to Mobile leg, but I know it's supposed to happen before the Superdome. And I know Mobile is between here and Pensacola, so it's not like you can take the train to Pensacola, but you could get close. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. dropping out and endorsing Donald Trump. We talked a little bit about Alien Romulus, the latest film in the Alien franchise, which I saw over the weekend, and I enjoyed very much. Look, it's very cool. Like, visually, it's a very exciting film. I think the cinematography, the special effect is all very good. But there are a couple moments in it where you literally want to hit yourself in the face because you're just, like, why did they need to do that? Why did they, you know, like when you go see a Terminator movie, like you go see Terminator 5 and somebody says like, I'll be back.
Oh, you mean fan service?
I've got to get to the chopper. Yeah. Like stuff like come, we don't, this movie was going great. And then it's probably like 4/5 into the movie. I won't say what it is, but they bring back a very famous line from earlier in the Alien franchise. And I groaned out loud. I was like, it just totally took me out of it. I was so upset.
Well, that's Predator and Alien. They've done the same thing. You know, they recall a bunch of the Predator lines.
Stop
and stuff
doing
like that.
But
to juxtapose that, this summer I saw Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
A lot of fan service, but it was done like basically the whole movie was just fan service.
That's
and
all
fan
that
service.
Movie is. That's all
worked.
Deadpool has ever been.
It worked.
It's like
worked.
He's always talking about, you know, which part of what Marvel or DC or what, like, it's always just this super self-referential, self-aware. That stuff wears on me, man.
So it can work if done correctly, but I understand what you mean.
Go see Alien Romulus. I really enjoy it. We're going to do the news bomb in just a moment, but I did want to pick up with John in New Orleans, who I kind of left hanging while we had to do the news. You still with us, Ms. John?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. So you had called in to kind of ask me two specific questions. One, like, why would I agree with a text that I got that labeled RFK Jr. a grifter? And I'll say this about that, ma'am, because there is a whole universe of these kind of conspiracy-minded people. Alex Jones is sort of the tip of the spear in this regard. And they're always selling us these conspiracy theories that the jet streams turn frogs gay or that Wi-Fi gives you cancer and stuff like that. And it is my belief, and I think this is a belief shared by many, that they're doing this for the money. They are doing this because it's a pretty niche lane that most serious people don't want to occupy. But there is a market for that sort of content. And there are many Americans who will give their attention and their money to people who peddle in those sort of conspiracy theories. And the people who are peddling that are cynical enough to do this for no other reason than a profit motive. So I think if RFK Jr. is associating himself with those sort of conspiracy-minded individuals to the degree that he has, and it is a high degree, in my view, that makes him one of them. Somebody who's just in it for the money and for the attention and is not really concerned about the well-being of the people to whom he is delivering this information to. At the end of the day, it's all about buy my supplements, buy my food bucket, right? Does that make sense?
Okay. May I respond to that?
Of course.
Okay. Thank you so much for helping me understand what I don't understand, because I actually listen to what RFK says. I don't listen to the mass media that is choosing to pick the parts that they would like to say about his message.
Mm-hmm.
RFK is a Kennedy. He doesn't need money to spread conspiracy theories. He's also a four-decade-long successful environmental lawyer.
That's true.
I used to live in New York, and I had the benefit of I had the benefit from the work that he did by cleaning up the Hudson River with Riverkeeper Foundation. Also, there's something called the Fairness Doctrine, and I've heard Scoot talk about this. It was repealed in the 80s by Ronald Reagan.
Correct.
And the Fairness Doctrine allowed fair coverage to all political parties when they were running for office. That was repealed, and what you have now is instead of actual journalism covering these candidates, you have something that is more like entertainment. Also, there is no obligation to cover candidates. RFK was on all the ballots until New York repealed that. The reason that they repealed that was because of a detail about an address, and that was that argument was made by lawyers that were hired by an organization called Clear Choice. They receive multi-millions of dollars from people who are supporting the Democratic Party. And if you go to their website, the website says a third party or independent candidate cannot be the president. It actually says that. It's the first sentence on their website. So RFK and his press team have tried on a daily basis to get coverage so that the American public can better understand what his message is. And he has touched on it on his speech. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to all of it when he stepped down, but a big part of it is the sick culture that is he's trying to fight chronic disease in America, and this is all factual. You can Google it and go to very credible sources, including the NIH and including the CDC, American government data research. You can get this information from. We have the highest heart rate disease. We have the highest rate of obesity and diabetes. And as a nation, we're the sickest developed nation. Not only that, the New York Times published an article about our healthcare system and how it's compared to Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. We are sicker, and they have a better healthcare system. And the reason for that is because we are so medicated, and our healthcare system is so expensive, and yet we have more chronic disease than other developed nations, and part of that is because the corporations and the pharmaceuticals have their hands in the pockets of the government. In 1986, there was another bill that was created, again by Ronald Reagan, and I'm not anti-Ronald Reagan, I'm just stating the facts.
Okay.
And he passed a bill that said pharmaceuticals cannot be sued for vaccines. I am not an anti-vaxxer, okay? I am a person that actually studied journalism and wanted to go into journalism because I'm about the facts. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying is that the pharmaceutical companies cannot be held liable for any of the damage or harm that their wares are creating. Mm-hmm. Also, I will say one more thing.
Okay, go ahead.
And then I will let you respond. There are two countries in the entire world that can advertise pharmaceuticals. The United States is one of them, and New Zealand is the other. Pharmaceuticals have too large of a hold on our healthcare, and our healthcare is not working for us. So that is one part of RFK's policies that very much resonate with me.
Yes.
And I do not see him as a conspiracy theorist.
Okay.
When he speaks, he makes sense to me.
Jean, look, I'm not in everything you just said, I'm not really finding very much to disagree with you about. I think RFK is correct when he says that, broadly speaking, we're over-medicated, our environment is badly polluted, and there's nobody that's ever going to really be held responsible for this in a way that's going to make it possible to turn it around. So there are things about his candidacy and his campaign that fit into a sort of broader pattern of things that we hear from people that know they cannot win. People who are running for office that know that they do not have a chance of winning often have the most freedom to speak really uncomfortable truths about the role of corporations, above big pharma, polluters. So it's not outside of the scope of possibility that he's being genuine when he says, like, I don't think that's a grift necessarily. I would say also, you know, there's the candidate and then there's the campaign. And we've heard a lot about, you know, in the last month since Kamala Harris became the nominee for president, there are people who point to her 2020 campaign and say she didn't even get one vote. She had to fold up her tent and go home before the first primary even happened. And that's true. And I think that that's true in part because she was a weak candidate back then. But also, if you don't hire the right campaign staff and you don't run a good campaign, you will not find a foothold and your message will not get out there. So if you feel like RFK Jr. didn't get a fair shake in this, and I'm not saying that he didn't, but I think you can just hold a little bit of space in your head for the possibility that is not the fault of the candidate, that is not the fault of the electorate, that's the fault of the campaign. I mean, there were plenty of sort of own goals throughout the short time that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was running for president. There was lots of opportunities that he had to not say bizarre stuff. And just, you know, without being prompted, see, yeah, I killed a bear. Yeah, I got a brain worm. You know, just like weird stuff. Like, he did not have to do that. So anyway, I've gone a little bit late here, John. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much for your articulation of those issues. It really helped us along today. We'll step away here and then we'll come back and do the 2 o'clock news break. If you want to hear any, if you want to respond to anything that you heard from me or from John in that moment, give me a call. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. I got nobody else to talk to the rest of this hour. No scheduled interviews, so go ahead and give me a call. We'll put you on the air as fast as we can. Or shoot me a text. It's the same number, 504-260-1870. I'll be right back after this. I'm Ian Hoke on WWL. Okay, a little bit behind here. We usually like to do the news bomb right after the news at 2:10, but, you know, we do whatever we want. Also at the same time. Hey, we're going to do the news bomb. Jam. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are hashing out the details of that September 10th debate.
The presidential campaigns are arguing over details of their next debate, scheduled for September 10th on ABC. While squabbling over a debate's mechanics is common, a strong debate showing is vital for both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, who moved atop the Democratic ticket after President Biden's disastrous first debate. The fight is over muting microphones when a candidate is not speaking. Both the president and Trump agreed to that for their debate.
I didn't like it the last time, but it worked out fine.
The Harris camp wants mics live all the time. Trump says the rules this time should be the same.
The truth is they're trying to get out of it.
But the ex-president's also raising the possibility he might not show up on ABC, calling the network a disgrace and saying he'd rather appear on nearly any other network. Sagar Magani, Washington.
You want to know what I think? I think Trump wants the microphones on and his campaign wants the microphones off because they saw how well that worked to his advantage in the debate with Biden. If he doesn't have the opportunity to interrupt and interject and insult at every possible opportunity, every time any little thing pops into his brain and it just tumbles out of his mouth, that doesn't work well for him in those debate settings anymore. That ship has sailed. That, you know, in 2015, that was very funny. We got a kick out of it. I don't think people really want to see that anymore. Donald Trump is in Michigan today. He's campaigning, and today is the third anniversary of the deadly bombing during the U.S. evacuation from Afghanistan.
The Republican presidential nominee will continue to hammer Vice President Kamala Harris and the Biden administration on the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021. Today, Donald Trump visits Arlington National Cemetery to pay his respects to 13 U.S. service members killed in a suicide bombing at the Kabul airport 3 years ago today. Then he heads to Detroit to address a conference of the National Guard Association of the U.S.
You had 13 heroic U.S. service members were tragically and needlessly killed.
Trump has been zeroing in on the Democratic presidential nominee and her role in foreign policy decisions.
These people don't have any idea what they're doing.
Last week in North Carolina, he highlighted the vice president's statements that she was the last person in the room before Biden made the decision on Afghanistan.
Kamala Harris and crooked Joe Biden delivered the most humiliating event in the history of our country.
Jennifer King, Washington.
Look, it was a tragic day, and it was definitely embarrassment. Was it the most embarrassing day in our nation's history? I know he thinks so, but I don't know. We could have a discussion about that if we wanted, if it wasn't so sad. J.D. Vance took a break from having no idea how to order donuts like a normal human being to run interference for Donald Trump on the abortion issue.
Donald Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, says the former president would not sign a federal abortion ban into law if he's elected president again. Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance vows he and Donald Trump would not seek a nationwide abortion ban, speaking on NBC's Meet the Press.
He wants this to be a state decision.
Pushed by moderator Kristen Welker to say Trump would veto such legislation.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not supporting it as the president of the United States, you fundamentally have to veto it.
But also on NBC, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
American women are not stupid.
She does not believe them.
We are not going to trust the futures of our daughters and granddaughters to two men who have openly bragged about blocking access to abortion.
Warren says Vance already sought the enforcement of an antiquated federal law that forbids the mailing of abortion supplies, including medication. I'm Jackie Quinn.
There's no way Donald Trump doesn't sign that bill if it hits his desk. I think anyone who thinks that that's something he would veto is kidding themselves. I know that he has been out here trying to moderate his position on abortion because he's seen what a disaster it's been at the ballot box. We can't take his word on anything anymore. We just can't. It's just not possible. It's certainly not possible for me to do that. As much as I like to imagine a nightmare scenario where a national abortion ban passes both houses of Congress and gets to the president's desk, I like to imagine that he would veto it, but I don't believe that he would. And did you see J.D. Vance at the donut shop? Like, pretty awkward stuff there. This is what happens when you don't have an advance team that knows what they're doing. This is what happens when you have a campaign that you think you can just run with sound bites and rallies and not staff that knows how to make things happen that make candidates look good. The fact that J.D. Vance went into that donut shop and was faced with two or three people that didn't know who he was, didn't care who he was, didn't want to be on camera, didn't want to smile at him, didn't want to talk to him. That's not J.D. Vance's fault, really. He has a whole team of people that are supposed to say, hey, we checked out this donut shop. We're going to have 15 people in there who are going to smile and wave and take selfies with you, and you can order donuts. But that's not quite what happened. Speaking of money, after their big week in Chicago, Democrats are rolling in dough.
Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign says it's now raised $540 million for its election battle against Donald Trump. The Harris campaign says it's seen a surge in contributions since President Biden stepped out of the race on July 21st. And during last week's nominating convention, a spokeswoman says they crossed the $500 million mark. Then more came in after Harris spoke Thursday night. That appears to surpass recent fundraising for Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. Earlier this month, his campaign says it took in nearly $139 million. At the start of August, the Trump campaign coffers had $327 million cash on hand. I'm Jackie Quinn.
In the Middle East, Israel and Hezbollah have traded their most intense fire in months, and then, thank God, they pulled back.
The cross-border attacks came as high-level talks resumed in Cairo, aimed at a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in the war in Gaza. In a speech, Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah said their attack was a response to Israel's killing of their top militant commander last month, but was delayed until now to give the Gaza ceasefire talks a chance. At a cabinet meeting, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the military eliminated thousands of rockets aimed at northern Israel and that this was not the end of the story. Egypt is currently hosting high-level talks, including the US chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the CIA director, as well as the head of Israel's intelligence agency. Hamas has sent a delegation to be briefed by mediators, but is not directly taking part in negotiations. I'm Nayan Kim.
Also a sort of escalation in Ukraine. Russia hammered Ukraine last night with over 100 missiles and about 100 drones.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has condemned Russia's deadly barrage on his country. In a video address, he said the attack involved more than 100 missiles of various types and around 100 drones. Like most previous Russian strikes, this one was just as vile, he said, targeting critical civilian infrastructure. At least three people were killed in the onslaught that began around midnight and continued into the day. 15 regions across the country were targeted, including Kyiv, where residents were filmed singing the city's anthem as they took shelter in a subway station. Explosions were heard in the Ukrainian capital, where power and water supplies were disrupted. I'm Nayan Kim.
I cannot believe they can keep that city running in the midst of all this. That speaks to the resilience of the Ukrainian people. Hey, we spoke briefly on Friday about those astronauts that are stuck in space. Well, there's been some movement there. NASA has made a decision against using a Boeing capsule to bring astronauts back from space, but it's kind of just making the problem a little bit worse for NASA.
NASA Administrator Bill Nelson made the announcement Saturday.
NASA has decided that Butch and Sonny will return with Crew 9 next February, and that Starliner will return uncrewed.
NASA astronauts Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams will come back in SpaceX in February. Boeing had insisted Starliner was safe. NASA gave two fixed-price contracts, one to Boeing for $4.2 billion, the other $2.6 billion to SpaceX. I'm Julie Walker.
August 26, 1920, 104 years ago today, the 19th Amendment to the Constitution took effect, guaranteeing American women the right to vote. It was a long time coming for Carrie Chapman Catt with the National American Women's Suffrage Association.
It took George Washington 6 years to rectify men's grievances by war, but it took 72 years to establish women's rights by law.
And it took another 44 years for black women's right to vote to be established by law. That's the 210 News Bomb. We'll have another one tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. On the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line, we find Michael in Metairie. Michael, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. Good evening. I just want to get a little history on Hezbollah because they're in the news now.
Yes, sir.
In 1983, in April, an American embassy was bombed by Hezbollah, an Iranian terror group.
Uh-oh. Michael, we can't hear you very well, man. What, do you have a speakerphone or something?
Is that better?
Yeah. Please continue. You just mentioned the bombings in 1983. Go on.
Okay, April 19th.
Michael, we'll have to get back to you in just a moment, man. Maybe try calling back in. We'll move on and come back. Terry's in Slidell. Hey, Terry, what's going on, Big T?
Hey, Ian, how you doing, man? A couple of things today. Why don't they really call it what it was? Non-military coup overthrow the government of the United States. That's exactly what it was. It was a coup. They knew this was coming. They just waited for the right moment, and they got their moment. They pulled the hat out. The cat out the hat. Put the mouse rabbit out the hat, and they did it. It was a coup. That's all it was. It was a non-violent coup. And then last week, one of your illustrious callers made a comment that no ex-president on the Republican side had the convention, but they had three Democratic presidents. Well, three of them in the Republican side, they got one, and that's Bush. that's really not a tremendous statement to say. Am I right?
Wait, so back up. You're saying there were former Republican presidents at the convention, at the Republican convention?
No, they only have one left, one Republican ex-president
alive. Oh, sure, because they're all dead.
There is no ex-president on the Republican side except for Bush.
Right.
On the Democratic side, you got
right, they're all still alive.
Bill,
I take your point,
Hillary,
Terry.
And then the thing is, what would these people do protesting all those poor people get bombed in Palestine? What would they have done during World War II when all those poor people in Germany had nothing to do with Hitler, but they were getting bombed? And what about Japan? You know, Japan was at war with the United States. Ask all the people in Japan how many got killed when they incinerated the whole city of Tokyo. I mean, bombing is part of war. Innocent people get killed during bombing. You know, that's just the way it is.
I want to go back and ask you about the convention, though, because you're right. You do have a point. The only former Republican president that's still alive is George Bush. And you think that he would not have been welcome at the convention or he didn't need to be there. What does that mean for you that he wasn't there?
Well, he said that the last time he wasn't coming, you know. So yeah. I knew he and Trump don't get along. And all that man club you talked about in Texas?
Yeah.
You ever heard of the Masters Golf Course?
Yeah.
You got to be a master. You got to be invited into that. That's the same thing with that club in Texas.
That's the Texas rich, man's club.
Rich people. And you had to go to Texas A&M University, at Texas A&M, to get that anyway. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. Why don't they just call it a coup? They overthrew the government of the United States.
No, Terry, they didn't. They didn't overthrow the government. If they overthrew the government, that would have meant they literally deposed Joe Biden and kicked him out of office, and Kamala Harris assumed the presidency that day. They did not kick him out of office. He's still the president today.
Okay. Well, they did it. Okay. Then. But that's just the way I feel about it.
No, I get it, man. I totally get it. But just like if you're going to use that specific language, you know, it means something. If you say it's a coup, that means they behead the government. All they did was make the vice presidential candidate the presidential candidate.
Right. All I got a question is this. Next time you ask all these callers, why don't you ask them this question? JFK, what would he be today? Would he be a Republican or a Democrat? In today's landscape,
what do you think?
What would JFK have been? What?
What do you think?
Well, I think he'd be I think he'd still be a Democrat, but he wouldn't be as far left as Kamala. I think he'd be a middle of the range. And when I grew up, I'm 70 years old. Of course, my parents hated the Kennedys and everything. But after all the research that I've seen on TV and read, I could have voted for Kennedy today. I would have voted for him.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people don't realize you're not from the state of Louisiana. 90% of the people in the state of Louisiana are all registered Democrats. You know why? You couldn't vote if you weren't a Democrat in the state of Louisiana because there was no two-party system.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's the way I look at it.
Terry, always good to hear from you, man. Stay cool out there, brother. Nice speaking to you. We'll come back and we'll talk to Irvin and Hammond and whoever else is on hold there, and I'll get more of your calls and more of your texts. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. He's in Pensacola. I'm at the big desk. Coleman's in the jar. You're with us. Everything's great. Stick around. Be right back after this. 244 here on WWL. In the last segment there, somebody had suggested the most embarrassing day. Oh, it's Donald Trump. He said the most embarrassing day in United States history was the Afghanistan withdrawal, which, to be clear, was absolutely embarrassing and a mess and a tragedy. Here's a text that says, hey, the most embarrassing day in the USA was January 6, 2021. Policemen lost their lives, millions of dollars of American dollars lost. Yeah, that was a pretty embarrassing day. Was it the most embarrassing day? I don't know. We can have that conversation. But it reminded me of a story I caught over the weekend, reading now from Politico. Oath Keeper's lawyer pleads guilty to obstructing January 6th investigation. Kelly Soray admitted that she advised members of the extremist group, the Oath Keepers, to destroy evidence. About 9 members of the Oath Keepers, including Stuart Rhodes, the guy with the eye patch, they have been convicted of seditious conspiracy, the gravest charges against any members of the January 6th mob. A handful of leaders of the Proud Boys also faced seditious conspiracy charges. Kelly, the lawyer for the Oath Keepers, who appeared relaxed in court, was referenced repeatedly during Stuart Rhodes' 2022 trial for her role in advising him and others in the group. She traveled with Stuart Rhodes to Washington, D.C. on January 3rd, 2021, 3 days before the attack, stopping along the way while Stuart Rhodes purchased $20,000 of firearms-related equipment. Why is Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers and their lawyer buying $20,000 worth of firearms-related equipment on their way to January 6th? You tell me. I suspect you know. I got it figured out. The article goes on. Down the hall from that courtroom on Friday, U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan affirmed the pretrial detention of John Banuelos, a January 6th defendant who prosecutors say carried a gun that day that he fired twice into the air. He argued that the shots were celebratory and they were not intended to cause harm. So you'll occasionally hear people say there were no guns. That mob wasn't armed. Yeah, they were. There was at least one guy, this guy, John Buelos, and there were others. This guy fired a gun twice into the air during the attack. And Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers bought $20,000 worth of firearms-related equipment on their way to Washington. On the text line, here's a text that says, "So, Ian, what you're saying is that you're a fan of staged public events with politicians. Kamala's team emptied out an entire convenience store so that she and Walz could go in there and pretend to be ordinary people searching for Doritos and corn nuts. Very authentic." I wouldn't agree that I'm a fan of staged public events, but I understand why they happen. If you look at the video of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in the store buying Doritos and put that side by side with J.D. Vance at the donut shop, which one of those pieces of video do you think is more effective for that campaign? It's not really a question. It's not really a contest. It should be immediately apparent. If you zoom out and kind of think, oh, it doesn't really matter if I'm a Harris supporter or if I'm a Trump supporter, which one of these videos is more effective for the campaign? Which one of these videos does a better job of making these candidates look like normal people that I want to vote for? There's no contest. So am I a fan of staged public events? No, not especially. But this is the way that campaigns are won and lost. I didn't make the rules. I appreciate what it takes to run a campaign. It's hard. It's work. It's labor. And people that don't treat it like that don't win. Straight up. Here's a text that says, "These are the facts. It seems that you don't want to share. It's been 36 days since Kamala announced, and she has not given an interview. Walz has a new negative revelation popping up almost daily. You can't or won't talk about these two people in the realistic terminology the rest of us are paying attention to. And yes, we know that is by a choice." Let me be clear. Just because I'm not talking about people the way that you talk about them, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have the truth and I don't. We hear a lot about Tampon Tim. This is maybe one of the negative revelations you're talking about, Texter. Tim Walz forced Minnesota public schools to put tampons in boys' bathrooms. He didn't. He literally did not. It's a lie. It's a lie. I'm not interested in taking up space here to talk about lies, unless they're like harmful to the American people. Like, I won in 2020 when I know I didn't. That's a lie that hurts people. We'll talk about that lie. Tim Walz mandated tampons going into boys' restrooms in Minnesota public schools is a stupid lie. And in 6 weeks, nobody will remember it. So, yeah, don't be surprised if I'm not talking about that today. Let's go ahead and read one more text and we'll get back. Irvin, I'll see you in just a moment here. This text says, "They made Harris candidate without due process. This is a fact. They did this because they did not have the time to do it right." They made Harris the candidate. And look, I'm just standing up for the truth here. Like, this is not a locked box. behind a like an iron wall, like with reinforced steel, that like we can't figure out what happened. No, it's actually really straightforward. Joe Biden said, I'm not going to run anymore. I'm suspending my campaign. A couple hours later, he says, I support Kamala Harris. Within the next couple days, all the delegates that had previously voted and been assigned to Joe Biden said, okay, well, we're going to do what he wants us to do. We're going to throw our support behind the vice presidential nominee in the same way that we would, most likely, if the president died unexpectedly or the presidential candidate at the top of the ticket was incapacitated and no longer able to campaign. I think four times out of five, the vice presidential candidate moves to the top of the ticket. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a coup. It's not terribly complicated. There was nothing unconstitutional or illegal about it. That's all. We'll step away and take care of a little bit more business and come back with more of your calls and texts on the Okunar Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. Coming up at 325, we're going to talk about this really sad tweet from Elmo. In January, Elmo, the Sesame Street character, said, hey, how's everybody doing? Elmo's just checking in. And the responses he got were super depressing and dark. I'm going to have a conversation with a man named Dave Batt. He's an expert in social media and mental health with PredictView. Do we all have undiagnosed mental health issues to a certain extent? Seems like it some days. I'll be right back after this on WWL. What do you think are the most perfect songs of all time? I got a list here that I'll share with you a little bit later. These are some of what Rolling Stone magazine called the most perfect songs of all time. There's a couple that you'd expect. There's a couple that you probably wouldn't. And in the next hour, I'm going to ask you to text me in what you think is a perfect song, a song that cannot be improved upon, a song without a wasted moment, a masterstroke of composition, lyricism, production, you name it. I got a couple that I'll suggest, but I want yours. And the most perfect songs that you can come up with, I'll collect them at the end of the day, and we'll play those on the air tomorrow. More about that later. I want to get back to the phone lines. Let's go to Irvin in Hammond. Irvin, you're on the air. Good afternoon. I'm sorry, Irwin, not Irvin.
Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
It's Irvin.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Yes, would it be? I'm going to get to Big Pharma in a minute, but I want to back off because I'm listening to all these calls. Let's remember, while the presidential election is important, I'm going to have a keen eye on Congress because that's going to determine a lot of things. You know, the Democrats are talking about raising long-term capital gains and different taxes on the rich. And then Trump's side is talking about lowering tax. Remember, none of that can happen without the approval of Congress. So, you know, you can talk about raising or cutting taxes, but that belongs to Congress. They make those laws.
That's right.
The president only interprets. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to Big Pharma and Mr. Kennedy. Spot on, and neither party really wants to jump on Big Pharma. Mm-hmm. Because Big Pharma has their hands in the pockets of Congress and the president.
Yep.
Along with big industry.
No lie.
So as a result, you know, America is into this mode where, okay, we'll wait for you to get sick with a poor lifestyle, and then we'll try to fix you up best we can with a bunch of prescriptions and surgical procedures and whatnot. We'll let you get overweight. We'll let you get, you know, too much sugar so you can get your diabetes. And then we'll let our drug situation take over. So this goes back to what I've said this country needs from the beginning. We need term limits on Congress, and we need a balanced budget. But going back to Congress, at the very least, every congressional candidate that becomes a congressman should disclose their financial records, but abstain and put into a third party any type of investment, because we have seen Congress people on both sides get to become millionaires because of their investments and because of some of the decisions they've made as congressional leaders and congressional people. I'll give it to you.
No, Irvin, you're absolutely right. You didn't say anything there I could possibly begin to disagree with. I am completely in favor of maximal financial disclosure for candidates for Congress and president. I think most of the time we get that. It's not compulsory. Most people offer it anyway, just as a way to kind of in an attempt at transparency. Some candidates very famously did not release their financial records for reasons that belong to them and them alone. But I think it would be cool if we mandated that for everybody. And I also completely agree, if you're a member of Congress, you shouldn't be trading stocks. And there's been some kind of strange bedfellows in this fight. I think I might be wrong about this. I'll look it up during the news. But I think it was AOC and Matt Gaetz who actually reached across the aisle to work together and come up with a law that says if you're a member of Congress, you can't trade individual stocks. If you have individual stocks, you got to sell them before you run or put them in some sort of third party apparatus and they take care of your stocks while you're in Congress. So that way you can't do this insider trading stuff. And both sides do that. You're absolutely right. And Nancy Pelosi, I really got in the way of that bill, I think, from AOC and Matt Gaetz. If it wasn't that proposition, it was another one. So there you have it. Okay, coming up at 3:25, we'll talk to Dave Batt. We'll talk about some perfect songs. And I'm going to get to that bad restaurant behavior. Right now, text me in what's the worst thing you've ever seen somebody do at a restaurant that drove you nuts. We'll see if it made the list. Here's the news. I'll be right back after that. Stick around. 2:44 here on WWL. In the last segment there, somebody had suggested the most embarrassing day. Oh, it's Donald Trump. He said the most embarrassing day in United States history was the Afghanistan withdrawal, which, to be clear, was absolutely embarrassing and a mess and a tragedy. Here's a text that says, hey, the most embarrassing day in the USA was January 6, 2021. Policemen lost their lives, millions of dollars of American dollars lost. Yeah, that was a pretty embarrassing day. Was it the most embarrassing day? I don't know. We can have that conversation. But it reminded me of a story I caught over the weekend, reading now from Politico. Oath Keepers lawyer pleads guilty to obstructing January 6th investigation. Kelly Soray admitted that she advised members of the extremist group, the Oath Keepers, to destroy evidence. About nine members of the Oath Keepers, including Stuart Rhodes, the guy with the eye patch, they have been convicted of seditious conspiracy, the gravest charges against any members of the January 6th mob. A handful of leaders of the Proud Boys also faced seditious conspiracy charges. Kelly, the lawyer for the Oath Keepers, who appeared relaxed in court, was referenced repeatedly during Stuart Rhodes' 2022 trial for her role in advising him and others in the group. She traveled with Stuart Rhodes to Washington, D.C. on January 3rd, 2021, 3 days before the attack, stopping along the way while Stuart Rhodes purchased $20,000 of firearms-related equipment. Why is Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers and their lawyer buying $20,000 worth of firearms-related equipment on their way to January 6th? You tell me. I suspect you know. I got it figured out. The article goes on. Down the hall from that courtroom on Friday, U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan affirmed the pre-trial detention of John Banuelos, a January 6th defendant who prosecutors say carried a gun that day that he fired twice into the air. He argued that the shots were celebratory and they were not intended to cause harm. So you'll occasionally hear people say there were no guns. That mob wasn't armed. Yeah, they were. There was at least one guy, this guy, John Buelos, and there were others. This guy fired a gun twice into the air during the attack. And Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers bought $20,000 worth of firearms-related equipment on their way to Washington. On the text line, here's a text that says, so, Ian, what you're saying is that you're a fan of staged public events with politicians. Kamala's team emptied out an entire convenience store so that she and Walz could go in there and pretend to be ordinary people searching for Doritos and corn nuts. Very authentic. I wouldn't agree that I'm a fan of staged public events, but I understand why they happen. If you look at the video of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in the store buying Doritos and put that side by side with J.D. Vance at the donut shop, which one of those pieces of video do you think is more effective for that campaign? It's not really a question. It's not really a contest. It should be immediately apparent. If you zoom out and kind of think, oh, it doesn't really matter if I'm a Harris supporter, or if I'm a Trump supporter, which one of these videos is more effective for the campaign. Which one of these videos does a better job of making these candidates look like normal people that I want to vote for? There's no contest. So am I a fan of staged public events? No, not especially. But this is the way that campaigns are won and lost. I didn't make the rules. I appreciate what it takes to run a campaign. It's hard. It's work. It's labor. And people that don't treat it like that don't win. Straight up. Here's a text that says, these are the facts. It seems that you don't want to share. It's been 36 days since Kamala announced and she has not given an interview. Walls has a new negative revelation popping up almost daily. You can't or won't talk about these two people in the realistic terminology the rest of us are paying attention to. And yes, we know that is by a choice. Let me be clear, just because I'm not talking about people the way that you talk about them, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have the truth and I don't. We hear a lot about Tampon Tim. This is maybe one of the negative revelations you're talking about, Texter. Tim Walz forced Minnesota public schools to put tampons in boys' bathrooms. He didn't. He literally did not. It's a lie. It's a lie. I'm not interested in taking up space here to talk about lies, unless they're like harmful to the American people. Like I won in 2020 when I know I didn't. That's a lie that hurts people. We'll talk about that lie. Tim Walz mandated tampons going into boys' restrooms in Minnesota public schools is a stupid lie. And in 6 weeks, nobody will remember it. So, yeah, don't be surprised if I'm not talking about that today. Let's go ahead and read one more text and we'll get back. Irvin, I'll see you in just a moment here. This text says they made Harris candidate without due process. This is a fact. They did this because they did not have the time to do it right. They made Harris the candidate. And look, I'm just standing up for the truth here. Like this is not a locked box behind a like an iron wall, like with reinforced steel that like we can't figure out what happened. No, it's actually really straightforward. Joe Biden said, I'm not going to run anymore. I'm suspending my campaign. A couple hours later, he says, I support Kamala Harris. Within the next couple days, all the delegates that had previously voted and been assigned to Joe Biden said, OK, well, we're going to do what he wants us to do. We're going to throw our support behind the vice presidential nominee in the same way that we would most likely if the president died unexpectedly. Or the presidential candidate at the top of the ticket was incapacitated and no longer able to campaign. I think four times out of five, the vice presidential candidate moves to the top of the ticket. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a coup. It's not terribly complicated. There was nothing unconstitutional or illegal about it. That's all. We'll step away and take care of a little bit more business and come back with more of your calls and texts on the Okunar Jewelers Talking text line 504-260-1870. Coming up at 325, we're going to talk about this really sad tweet from Elmo. In January, Elmo, the Sesame Street character, said, hey, how's everybody doing? Elmo's just checking in. And the responses he got were super depressing and dark. I'm going to have a conversation with a man named Dave Batt. He's an expert in social media and mental health with PredictView. Do we all have undiagnosed mental health issues to a certain extent? Seems like it some days. I'll be right back after this on WWL. What do you think are the most perfect songs of all time? I got a list here that I'll share with you a little bit later. These are some of what Rolling Stone magazine called the most perfect songs of all time. There's a couple that you'd expect. There's a couple that you probably wouldn't. And in the next hour, I'm going to ask you to text me in what you think is a perfect song, a song that cannot be improved upon, a song without a wasted moment, a masterstroke of composition, lyricism, production, you name it. I got a couple that I'll suggest, but I want yours. And the most perfect songs that you can come up with, I'll collect them at the end of the day and we'll play those on the air tomorrow. More about that later. I want to get back to the phone lines. Let's go to Irvin in Hammond. Irvin, you're on the air. Good afternoon. I'm sorry, Irwin, not Irvin.
Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
It's Irvin.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Yes, would it be? I'm going to get to Big Pharma in a minute, but I want to back off because I'm listening to all these calls.
let's remember, while the presidential election is important, I'm going to have a keen eye on Congress, because that's going to determine a lot of things. You know, the Democrats are talking about raising long-term capital gains and different taxes on the rich. And then Trump's side is talking about lowering tax. Remember, none of that can happen without the approval of Congress. So, you know, you can talk about raising or cutting taxes, but that belongs to Congress. They make those laws.
That's right.
The president only interprets. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to Big Pharma and Mr. Kennedy. Spot on, and neither party really wants to jump on Big Pharma. Mm-hmm. Because Big Pharma has their hands in the pockets of Congress and the president,
yep,
along with big industry.
No lie.
So as a result, you know, America is into this mode where, okay, we'll wait for you to get sick with a poor lifestyle, and then we'll try to fix you up best we can with a bunch of prescriptions and surgical procedures and whatnot. We'll let you get overweight. We'll let you get, you know, too much sugar so you can get your diabetes, and then we'll let our drug situation take over. So this goes back to what I've said this country needs from the beginning. We need term limits on Congress, and we need a balanced budget. But going back to Congress, at the very least, every congressional candidate that becomes a congressman should disclose their financial records, but abstain and put into a third party any type of investment, because we have, yes, seen Congress people on both sides get to become millionaires because of their investments and because of some of the decisions they've made as congressional leaders and congressional people. I'll give it to you.
No, Irvin, you're absolutely right. You didn't say anything there I could possibly begin to disagree with. I am completely in favor of maximal financial disclosure for candidates for Congress and president. I think most of the time we get that. It's not compulsory. Most people offer it anyway, just as a way to kind of, you know, in an attempt at transparency. Some candidates very famously did not release their financial records for reasons that belong to them and them alone. But I think it would be cool if we mandated that for everybody. And I also completely agree, if you're a member of Congress, you shouldn't be trading stocks. And there's been some kind of strange bedfellows in this fight. I think I might be wrong about this. I'll look it up during the news. But I think it was AOC and Matt Gaetz who actually reached across the aisle to work together and come up with a law that says if you're a member of Congress, you can't trade individual stocks. If you have individual stocks, you got to sell them before you run or put them in some sort of third party apparatus and they take care of your stocks while you're in Congress. So that way you can't do this insider trading stuff. And both sides do that. You're absolutely right. And Nancy Pelosi, I really got in the way of that bill, I think, from AOC and Matt Gaetz. If it wasn't that proposition, it was another one. So there you have it. Okay, coming up at 3:25, we'll talk to Dave Batt. We'll talk about some perfect songs. And I'm going to get to that bad restaurant behavior. Right now, text me in what's the worst thing you've ever seen somebody do at a restaurant that drove you nuts. We'll see if it made the list. Here's the news. I'll be right back after that. Stick around.